this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guest. And this evening, our guest is Dr. Catherine Pullman, who's a researcher, has a PhD, and spent her life, both she and her husband were researchers, in another field. But we're going to be talking this evening about the relationship between chronic infection and rheumatoid arthritis. And there are so many people in our country today who suffer from rheumatoid arthritis. It's really become ever so much more common in the past 20 or 30 years. But I can remember when I was teaching at a university over in South Africa and had a lot of time for studying, and it was in the mid-1970s, going to the medical library there, and we had a wonderful medical library, and reading some of the articles about the relationship between rheumatoid arthritis and infection, a mycoplasma infection, and the fact that many of the patients did respond to antibiotic treatment over a period of years. And when I came back to the United States in 1977, why, I found that there was just no reference to that here, although the articles I'd read were in the English literature. And the average doctor is totally unaware of the fact that there have been many successful treatments. That doesn't mean that every single patient with rheumatoid arthritis is going to respond, but many of them do, and there is definitely, for many people, an infectious component to this disease. And unless you're anticipating it and looking for it, why, many people then will see the progressive joint destruction, the erosion of the joint surfaces, which necessitates either fusion or arthroplasty or just chronic disability, and this is a chronic crippling disease. Well, Dr. Pullman, why don't you tell our listeners your story of what happened to you and how you hit upon this fact that really there are at least a small number of doctors who have been treating rheumatoid arthritis with antibiotic therapy.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me back, Dr. Stan. It's a pleasure to be with you. About a dozen years ago, I fell down a flight of stairs and I tore ligaments in both ankles, and it took an extraordinarily long time to heal, and my primary care doctor was puzzled and sent me to a rheumatologist who ran some tests and diagnosed rheumatoid arthritis, which was quite a shock because I didn't have any RA in my family, and it just kind of came out of the blue. So I got a second, a third, and a fourth opinion, and they all said the same thing. And I said, all right, doctor, I have it. How do I get rid of it? And they said, we don't know what causes it, and there is no cure, and here, take these pain pills, and if there's any change, it will definitely get worse, and you'll end up in a wheelchair. I'm a very, very active person, and a hiker, a tournament archer, a field photographer, and I just couldn't see myself in a wheelchair. At that time, I was working for the RAND Corporation, which is a think tank out here in California. So I had the research skills and certainly the motivation to turn my attention to myself as a project and find out just what was, if there was a cure out there, if I could find it. And I did discover a treatment developed by Dr. Thomas McPherson Brown in the 1940s. He was a very illustrious doctor, multi-credentialed, an MD, a rheumatologist, dean of medicine at George Washington University, a colleague of Dr. Sabin of polio vaccine fame, and he drew the connection between rheumatoid or rheumatic illness and bacterial infection.
All right, you hold that up. We're going to be back in just a moment with Dr. Catherine Pullman, and we're talking about the relationship between rheumatoid arthritis and chronic infection. Will you pick up the story there?
Okay. He published his results and presented them to the annual convention of rheumatologists, but his timing was terrible because cortisone had just been invented. And this was supposed to be the answer, and they dismissed Dr. Brown. And for decades, he tried to interest the medical establishment in this antibiotic protocol, which is akin to the treatment they give to teenagers with acne. It's a very low dose of tetracycline antibiotics given over a long period of time. Now, in my own case, it took 8 months, but I am in full remission, and there have been many, many scientific studies about this, but apparently it hasn't penetrated the medical establishment. And that's really unfortunate because, as you said earlier in your summary, one size doesn't fit all. It doesn't work for everyone, but it is such a benign treatment that it is worth a try. In fact, the tetracycline treatment can be used as a testing probe to see whether there, if there's a reaction to the antibiotic, if there is an infection there.
Of course, there are much more sophisticated diagnostic procedures now that are available, those similar to the ones that our friend Dr. Garth Nicholson uses, where they can actually begin looking for the various chemical makeup of that these mm-hmm. chronic bacteria. Some of these chronic, especially the mycoplasm, which of course is present in many of the cases, is very difficult to ascertain. Certainly, there's nothing wrong with a clinical trial, but it's far better off to make the diagnosis ahead of time. And the great tragedy is that cortisone makes you feel better, but it's sort of like just covering up, you know, the dirt in your home by painting over the floors and leaving the dirt there. Cortisone actually suppresses symptoms, but of course the disease progresses, and you take away the pain, as of course the inflammatory condition of rheumatoid arthritis simply erodes away the articular surface, and then of course you're left with denuded joints and a destroyed joint for which there really is no recovery, and you either replace the joint or move ahead to progressive disability. So, I mean, the idea that there really was a treatment that was available back in the 1940s, and certainly we've heard about Dr. Brown and talked to people who've worked with him and on this project, and yet for one reason or another, organized medicine has refused to actually embrace this concept. Now, we're going to be back with Dr. Catherine Pullman, and we'll certainly cover what she has learned and how she was able to recover from this terrible disease. Hang on there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Pullman was simply talking about how she was on a course of antibiotics for about 8 months, a low dose of tetracycline type of medication, and eventually she recovered and is fully active now. And the cortisone, which of course is used so frequently, simply covers up the symptoms, and then there's some of the other very, very serious anti-inflammatory medication. Some of these things are used for the treatment of cancer with all sorts of complications, the gold that they've used. But gold, if it is, when it does work, probably it's because of its antibacterial qualities. But Dr. Pullman, why don't you tell us what you've learned, and as you've looked into this, what's happened to other people who have had antibiotic treatment for their rheumatoid type arthritis?
Well, since I did so much research, I published a book called Rheumatoid Arthritis, The Infection Connection, and as a result, I'm getting emails and letters from all over the world, and people saying, my doctor never told me about this treatment. I got your book, and this was a real eye-opener, and I persuaded my doctor to try it, and, it's not a magic bullet, but it's certainly worth a try, and I published the book to give people some hope. It's a totally non-profit venture. I don't make any money on the book. I don't sell any supplements, no counseling, no nothing. Everything goes to research. In fact, the Road Back Foundation was named after Dr. Brown, and that's where a lot of our money goes. It's amazing that the array of drugs that the doctors do prescribe for rheumatoid arthritis and joint pain in general has such horrible side effects that people are unaware of. It feels so good to feel good that, in fact, in Corazon's case, there's bone deterioration, mental problems, eye problems over a long period of time. That's not enough. You, in parallel with the antibiotic protocol, you must get your immune system back on track. It's not enough just to take the tetracycline or the minocycline, which is a preferred type of tetracycline in that family. You just really have to work on your lifestyle changes so that your immune system can be strong enough to overcome any future infections and keep them under control.
All right. Now, certainly are the things that you have to take as well as the antibiotics if you're going to be on antibiotics for a long period of time.
Oh, definitely. And I kind of belabor that point in my book. Anytime you take an antibiotic, you're, anti means against, biotic means living. You're going to kill every living thing in your gut, and you need some of those beneficial bacteria to help digestion. So in killing off the bad bacteria, you're also killing off the good. So you must replenish the good ones to avoid gut reactions like candida, in, yeast overgrowth, and other gut problems by taking acidophilus and yogurt and those kinds of things with living organisms in there to replenish the good bacteria. Of course, you don't take it at the same time as the antibiotic. You would take a pill of antibiotic in the morning and then your acidophilus, say, at night. So that's far enough away so that you're not killing off those good bacteria that you've just ingested.
And I think this is really very important, and but certainly you need to be in, under the care of somebody. But there's a lot of great information in this book, which is one reason we carry the book. We think it's so vitally important that this book is available, and certainly from at least as far as the medical information in this book, we certainly endorse the medical information, and I think it's very, very important. Do you have any idea what percentage of people with rheumatoid arthritis do benefit from antibiotic, chronic antibiotic, or long-term antibiotic therapy?
Well, according to Dr. Franco at the Arthritis Center of Riverside, and say Julian Whitaker at the Whitaker Wellness Institute, both of those are in Southern California. Julian Whitaker has written many books on natural medicine, and he's kind of nationwide known, nationally known. According to them, the pool statistics showed that you have a 30 to 40% probability of complete remission using the antibiotic protocol. You have a 70 to 80% probability of a really significant reduction of painful symptoms. Your inflammation will go down, in other words. And that alone is worth a try. But you will know within a week or so whether this is working. I certainly did. It's rather dramatic.
And really, there's really one of the great tragedies of modern times that this is not widely recognized. And yet, it's a very old treatment we're talking about, 1940s. This is, what, 65 years ago that Dr. Brown was writing about this.
It is tragic, and I often joke with my lecture audiences, and I say, well, it took 50 years for surgeons to recognize the importance of washing their hands before operating, so, you know, maybe its time has come for Dr. Brown's work to be finally recognized.
Well, I can remember, of course, when I was practicing medicine, and one of the things that really plagued us was, you know, stomach ulcers, and people would get stomach ulcers, and they'd get bleeding ulcers, and we give them antispasmodics, and we'd give them
antacids,
and all of these things. Yeah. And you know, there was some fellow, I forget where he was, he says, no, you're all wrong. This is an infection. There's a bacterial infection in there. And everybody thought he was crazy. And I don't know how long it finally took before the medical profession realized that this really is an infectious process, and you have the people with these ulcers, and you give them the, you know, antibiotics, and they clear up, and they don't need the antacids, and they don't need the antispasmodics. And I hate to think how many people, you know, were operated on how many people had bleeding ulcers and chronic disability, and we sent them to psychiatrists because we all knew that it was an emotional problem. And if people would just relax, why, it would all go away. Well, of course, you've got this burning in the pit of your stomach. Of course you're going to be nervous, and especially when the doctor keeps telling you it's all in your head, then you just got to learn to relax. And they actually had an infection with a bacteria pylori, the exact terminology I don't know, but it's widely accepted now that this is an infectious condition. In fact, the more we learn about some of the even some of the heart attacks that people have, they will have these chronic infections, these chronic chlamydia infections or chronic mycoplasma infections, and the relationship to many of our progressive neurological diseases, which are infectious in nature. But of course, we have to look beyond the obvious. We have to get doctors to begin to challenge what they've been told. And when the scientific studies come along, at least to look at them, and not to listen to what other people say, to use their own judgment. What we need is for doctors to be doctors, not simply to follow a protocol that somebody else has laid out, because when that happens, there is no more progress. Well, certainly, what sort of a response? Now, you mentioned that a lot of people have written to you and been very, very appreciative of your book.
Yes. As I said, I get the email from all over the world, and I'm particularly touched by people who write and say, my child has just been diagnosed with juvenile rheumatoid arthritis. Now, this is especially tragic because normally when you hear the word arthritis, you think of an older person, the wear and tear of the joints, and they're limping along. And here's maybe a three-year-old or five-year-old with rheumatoid arthritis. And you know that the nonstop inflammation in the joints is going to wear away the cartilage. And in their 20s, that child is going to be limping around like an octogenarian. And if there's something I can do to get them on the right path, I'll do it. Now, tetracycline antibiotics are not usually given to kids under about, I think it's 13 or 14 years old, because the teeth are still developing. And the antibiotic may result in permanent staining of the teeth. Now, if it were my child, and I had that dilemma to choose between stained teeth, and which could be capped or whitened later on, or disintegrating joints, that would be a very easy coin toss for me.
I'm sure it would be. Well, what sort of organism are we primarily thinking of? What are the organisms that create the chronic infections?
Well, as you mentioned before, the Helicobacter pylori is the root cause of most peptic ulcers. And the doctor, there were two Australian doctors, actually, Drs. Warren and Marshall, who discovered this connection in 1982, but it wasn't until 1994 that the National Institutes of Health reviewed the medical studies and concluded that this bacterium was responsible. I might add, one potential side effect of prednisone is peptic ulcers. There are many, many different types of organisms that can besiege us. The focus of my book is on something called mycoplasma.
Right.
And this is a rather interesting organism. It's a cell wall deficient bacterium. And it can assume the shape of another microbe and hide out in your joints. So that it's very, very hard for the immune system to find it. And it's very hard to test for, because it can't be cultured in the lab. Well, it might be, but it's very, very difficult.
And in fact, a lot of the laboratory studies for mycoplasma really are invalid. In other words, if you get a positive one thing, but so many people who have the mycoplasma infection, they can't find it with routine tests, and they don't have an elevated sedimentation rate, and they don't have an altered white count, which is the hallmarks of a chronic infection, and the doctor has no idea what's going on. My telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We'll be right back. Well, so certainly these aquatic mycoplasma infections, they're really much more prevalent today than they were in the past.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iOtterol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Tieri. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
If you'd like to talk to Dr. Pullman, and again, the title of your book is?
It's Rheumatoid Arthritis, The Infection Connection. And you can buy it through Dr. Stan's radio station or my website, which is www.ra-infection-connection.com or amazon.com or ask at your bookstore.
All right, fine. That's the rheumatoid arthritis, The Infection Connection. And this is such an important issue. because, of course, this fits and overlaps with so many of the other disease complexes we talk about here. The million people with chronic fatigue who can't get treatment, the 2 million people with fibromyalgia who are sort of looked upon as sort of a medical misfits by most doctors. They just complain and complain and complain because they ache all over and they hurt all over, and a lot of them can't think very clearly. And of course, then this merges into the Gulf War illness, and then of course into Lyme disease, and so we have so many people. And these are certainly, although rheumatoid arthritis existed back in the 1940s, it was nowhere near as common as it is today. So, have you talked to physicians about this? What sort of response did you get from your physician when you suggested that what you had might be an infectious condition?
Unfortunately, the four rheumatologists that I consulted with, the wall came up. They did not want to hear about this. They had not studied it. They didn't trust my research. They wouldn't even try it. I got the prescription for the tetracycline from my family doctor, who I've dealt with for 20 years, and he knows I'm a dedicated researcher, and he said, all right, we'll try it. And I wanted a doctor's supervision for this because I wanted to watch my test results get better and better and better, and they did. And he was just amazed. Now, if your listeners would go to the Road Back Foundation, their website is www.roadback.org. This was named after Dr. Brown, who published a book called The Road Back. They have volunteers who will try to help you find a physician in just about every state of the Union and in Canada. We have some international resources there.
All right, well, I think that's great, because you really, you're not going to be able to get the antibiotics unless you get them through a doctor. And since most doctors don't recognize this, and there's an organized, orchestrated effort to conceal this solid scientific explanation for this terrible, terrible disease, why I think it's important that you find a doctor who is acquainted with this and is willing to stick his neck out and do what's good for his patients, and not be worried about the government or medical organizations, besieging him as being a quack. So certainly there is a place for chronic, long-term antibiotic treatment. It's fairly low dose. How much antibiotics did you take?
Well, everyone's case is a little bit different. In my case, I took 100 milligrams once a day, for 2 weeks, and then once every other day for a few weeks, and kept that up for 8 months.
Now,
somebody else might be a little different.
Is that the same as doxycycline?
It could be. Minocycline is the best. It's the most effective. It does bind to iron, so you have to be careful not to take iron at the same time. But there are three different tetracyclines available. There's tetracycline, doxycycline, and minocycline.
All right.
And minocycline is better because it has an extended spectrum of activity, greater tissue penetrability, and higher and more sustained serum levels. Now, I have Dr. Joseph Mercola, who is nationally known. He has the most visited natural medicine website in the United States. He wrote an appendix for me, doctor to doctor, explaining how the protocol works and what the dosage should be.
Yes, because we are well acquainted with Dr. McCauley. He's got a lot of good information on his website, and people can go there. Anyway, of course, our guest is Dr. Catherine Pullman, and if you have a question or comment, give us a call. Our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 right here in the Central Coast of California. Well, Dr. Pullman, could you tell us a little bit more about the mycoplasma? Because this is certainly an unusual organism, and it really conceals itself within the cell. It has no regular wall of its own. Could you tell us a little bit about this strange organism, which is sort of halfway between a bacteria and even the smaller forms like the virus, but it's not a virus, viral infection. It has its own, it's able to live on its own, but it certainly wants to utilize the substance of the cell. So what could you tell us about mycoplasms?
Mycoplasmas, we have billions of mycoplasmas that are perfectly harmless in our bodies at any given time. And sometimes they evolve and mutate into what they call L forms. And the L stands for Dr. Joseph Lister, brilliant, well-known chemist. The L forms are remnants of childhood infections. And they just kind of swim around. They don't need living cells in which they can grow. They can bind with other foreign bodies that enter antigens that come into our bodies. And when they become strong enough and colonize, they become a threat. The immune system then takes notice and comes to get them and is sometimes overwhelmed. If your immune system is kind of on the brink, as mine was when I had my fall down the stairs, it's just impossible to ward off other infections that may come in. And the problem with the therapeutic drugs that they give for rheumatoid arthritis now is that they suppress the immune system. So the pain is gone, but you're now left wide open for other infections.
And I think that is really such an important issue, because the cortisone really does suppress the immune system. And as you say, I mean, it makes the patient feel so much better. And I've put people with certainly inflammatory arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis on the cortisone, and they just think it's great. They just don't want to get off of it because it relieves the pain. But unfortunately, it's not approaching the cause of the disease. It's relieving the pain, it's relieving the symptoms, but the disease continues. The erosion of the articular surfaces, it continues. The pannus, inflammatory tissue, grows out and erodes the joint surface there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Catherine Pullman. And once again, Dr. Pullman, would you like to get your website out so people would know how to get in touch with you?
Oh, sure. www.ra-infection-connection.com. I have a lot of free health articles on a wide variety of topics: seasonal allergies, osteoarthritis, osteoporosis, some of the conference presentations that I've given. Some of them are quite technical, but some of them are, high school graduate level. And if you have any questions, there's a contact the author email there, and I'd be happy to help you.
And, of course, Dr. Pullman does have a background in medical-affiliated things. She was actually a researcher, well, she and her husband. What was your actual field of expertise?
My degrees are in mathematics and physics. And
but you did a lot of research work for many years, didn't you?
Well, yeah, I started out at TRW Systems. It's an aerospace corporation here in Southern California, and I worked on the Apollo program, on the Space Telescope. Then I went to the RAND Corporation, and I worked with the Air Force looking ahead to their needs way past the 21st century into 2020, and helped with Army logistics, the telecommunications, all kinds of scientific things like that. So I have an analytical approach to things. And there's a lot of junk out there on the Internet, and in the back of my book, I've put the websites of the cream of the crop, as far as I'm concerned, the most credible websites that you can use for your own research, how to find a doctor, how to find nutrition that's good for you in concert with your fibromyalgia or MS or lupus condition while you're taking the antibiotics.
And because lupus fits into the same general category of inflammatory disease, doesn't it?
Certainly does. Dr. Stan, you mentioned cardiac problems, and that's another infection called chlamydia pneumonia. Right. Now, every time you see pneumonia on the end of a disease or a organism, that means it's going to be ingested through breathing somebody else's germs, and you're going to settle in the lungs, and it's going to be a respiratory kind of thing. Chlamydia pneumonia has been found in 60% of autopsied heart attack victims. So you can see that this chlamydia infection has been fomenting for years and finally ends up as a problem and giving you a heart attack. I have a full article on my website about that.
And I think that's so important because, of course, everybody, oh, my goodness, we've got to get your cholesterol down. Your cholesterol, is 200. We've got to get it down to 170. Well, half the people who die of heart attacks have normal cholesterol, and only half of them have an elevated cholesterol, and yet the majority of the people with heart attacks have these chronic chlamydia-type infections, sometimes it's chlamydia, sometimes it's mycoplasm, and yet, of course, it is the inflammatory process, and there's much more, certainly, a relationship between the inflammatory tests than there is to the cholesterol, but, of course, cholesterol is great for the people who make Lipitor and all the other statin drugs. And this is one of the greatest scams of all time.
Yes.
There's so much more to this story, and the average doctor has never heard of the chlamydia connection and its relationship to the arteriosclerotic plaques that are, of course, clotting and leading to both strokes and heart attacks. So, do you cover any of that in your book, or would that be up in your webpage?
That would be on the website. That goes beyond what's in my book. I was really trying to focus on rheumatoid arthritis. And I'm almost sorry I did, because there's about 60 different conditions that this antibiotic protocol can be applied to. That's the way it is. There's 3 million rheumatoid arthritis sufferers out there, maybe 4 million by now, and that we know about. And at least I can help them.
All right, fine. Certainly, our good friend Dr. Garth Nicholson has talked about the chlamydia connection to heart attacks and of course these arteriosclerotic plaques. So remember, in fact, his own father, was caught with having problems with his heart, and he was able to cure him. And he was in his 90s, but he was able to help him with the long-term antibiotic therapy.
Oh yes. And his daughter aspired to a career in the military as a helicopter pilot. And every time she'd come back from a flight, she'd say, "Dad, I've got this feeling of arthritis. I'm limping around like an old lady." And she was in her 20s. And she said, "What's going on?" And Dr. Nicholson took time off from his professorship to find out what was going on with his daughter, found out this infection connection. And he was one of the reviewers of my book. I'm honored that he took the time to do that. And I quote him quite often in my book. He's just a genius at this. And I'm glad that he's on our side here.
I am too. Well, he paid a terrible price for being an honest researcher. But
he did.
He at least was better off than many of the people who worked with who ended up very dead. And for those of our listeners who have not yet read his book, Project Daylily, and that was the name that the government had given to their experimental project where they were creating these terrible new diseases that plague our citizens with, Project Daylily. Now we carry that Catherine Pullman's book, The Infection, Rheumatoid Arthritis, The Infection Connection. And then if you want to know more about this, Project Daylily. This is not imaginary. It is really very real. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. If you have a question, you have a comment, or you'd like to know more about this, but this is not imaginary, it's real, and I've read much of this literature. As I say, I read it in the 1970s. I came back from Africa, nobody talked about it, and I really, of course, didn't pay much attention until I retired from medicine in the early 1990s, about 1993, 1994, and then I had time to begin doing more in the way of research and talking to people who specialize in these fields to find out that there was so much I did not know when I was practicing medicine. And this is what the real problem we have with physicians. I mean, if it isn't mentioned in their medical journal, if it isn't mentioned, by at the medical meetings they attend, if it isn't mentioned by the detailed men and women who come to their offices to tell them about all these wonderful new medicines, new forms of cortisone or other anti-inflammatory medication that will make the patient with rheumatoid arthritis feel better, but it just covers up the disease, well, the doctor is not going to believe that there's something there that he doesn't know. And the truth of the matter is, you need to get the information. You need to get the information up Dr. Pullman's webpage and take it to your doctor and say, at least evaluate this, doctor. Could it possibly be that there is more here than meets the eye? Well, anyway, if you have a question or comment, you know somebody who's had the treatment, why, give us a call. We'd love to hear from you at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. Sydney, do you think that the treatment, the antibiotic treatment for rheumatoid arthritis, is catching on, or is it mainly just people who've heard you on radio programs such as ours?
Oh boy, I'm trying it hard, Dr. Stan, but sometimes I feel like a little voice crying in the wilderness. Every once in a while, someone will tell me of an enlightened doctor who will come through and take a chance and start applying the antibiotic protocol. Dr. Julian Whitaker's institute down here, they are quite open about that. But a lot of doctors in the medical, allopathic doctors will say, well, that naturopathic medicine, that's just a lot of crystals and candles, and, that doesn't make any sense. We've got the real medicine here. I just learned of a Dr. Gabriela Alarcón, who is on the staff of the University of Birmingham, and she has started applying the antibiotic protocol to people who are coming from out of state. She has a 6-month waiting list. A lot of Dr. Brown's former patients live in Alabama. Alabama has the dubious distinction of being one of the highest number of rheumatoid arthritis cases in the United States. Yay, we're number one.
That's something you really wouldn't want to be, too. You certainly wouldn't want to be one of the sufferers, that's for sure. Yes. Let's go to Gloria, who's calling from Spokane. Hi, Gloria, how are you doing?
Hi, I just wanted to add a comment. I worked for 20 years for a periodontist who had a master's degree in immunology before he went further in dental school and became a periodontist. That's a gum specialist.
Right.
And with his master's degree in immunology, in the early 70s, we would use doxycycline or, tetracycline, along with really deep scalings. And there were so many patients that we didn't have to do periodontal surgery on because the combination of the antibiotic therapy and the deep cleanings were just miraculous. And sometimes there were also different patients in the periodontal practice that just didn't respond, and just by giving them some doxycycline occasionally, we saw remarkable results. So I just wanted to add that it just goes along with what I saw.
No, that's a very, very good observation. And, I'll never forget when I was in medical school, we had one of the older orthopedists trained at the Mayo Clinic, And he used to treat a lot of his orthopedic patients that would have all these arthritic conditions with simply going out and having all their teeth pulled out. Well, that was a pretty horrific thing to do, but I'm sure he was really, of course, was cleaning up a lot of their chronic infections by so doing, and that's the reason the patients got better. It's an awful hard way to do it. I think maybe I'll just try the deep cleaning and the doxycycline and keep my teeth. Anything else, Gloria?
No, and so it was just very interesting that it's successful. I saw it firsthand for years.
All right, thanks very much. Good to hear from you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Let's go to Linda, who's calling from Castroville, and again, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Hi, Linda, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, hi, Dr. Stan. I'm a little ignorant here, so please excuse the question. Okay, I'm calling my mom's case. She has a Fed rate of 30, which is just, you know, at the highest point of the range, so the doctor decided not to give her prednisone. But, on the other hand, her eosinophil count is just 1 point over the high range. So what does that mean? Is a mycoplasma, I know eosinophil is associated with parasites. Is a mycoplasma parasitic?
No, not really that, no. Certainly eosinophils reflect allergies of something, allergy to something, and certainly could be, but certainly parasites would fit into that category. The mycoplasm really is not a parasite at all. It is an infectious organism, but it tends to sort of hide in the cells, and it's hard for the doctor to make the diagnosis, because your white count doesn't necessarily go up, your sedimentation doesn't necessarily go up, and all you have is just this chronically disabled patient, and you know, unless you're thinking of this and looking for it, well, you're not going to find it. There are certain tests that can be done. A Pullman, you get into any of the special tests that can be done to identify the mycoplasma and where they could be, a patient could get them?
Well, one of the gold standard tests is a PCR, polymerase chain reaction test. Okay. And they're kind of expensive, and you would have to ask for it, and the doctor might give you an argument about it. Chapter 6 of my book has many different tests. Food sensitivity could be a problem. An ELISA test, an enzyme-linked immunosorbent assay test. I'm sorry, I'm throwing a bunch of big words at you, but thyroid testing is another thing that you could do. It is not necessarily a mycoplasma infection, but a PCR test would certainly reveal that.
Okay. Because if you have the mycoplasma, then many of the people would respond to a long-term antibiotic therapy. But you don't want to just give the things. You want to try to make the diagnosis first. That's the scientific way to do it.
Mm-hmm. She had the same symptoms, like she had a car accident. Boom, she'd get weak, like the fibromyalgic points would bother her.
Does she have a rheumatoid condition, or is she more like a fibromyalgia?
I think it's osteoarthritis.
This is an inflammatory arthritis. There's a difference between osteoarthritis, which is a degenerative arthritis, and rheumatoid, which is an inflammatory. Dr. Pullman, if somebody came to you with osteoarthritis, how would you feel they would fit into this category?
Well, osteoarthritis is unfortunately a nasty segue right from rheumatoid arthritis, because, as I mentioned earlier, the nonstop inflammation in the joints is just ripping up your cartilage. But there are things you can do for osteoarthritis. One of the main things is just gentle stretching exercises. If you can keep your bones in good alignment, and that means strengthening the muscles that hold the bones in place. And simple things like yoga, Pilates, just the stretching things that you don't have to be a marathon runner. Or lifting weights is good too, but you have to be very, very careful. Have good posture, sit correctly, don't sit too long. I have a little timer. If I sit at the computer and get lost, you know, in my research, I have the timer going off every 45 minutes. I get up and move around. Blood circulation is very important. Mycoplasmas are anaerobic type organisms, and that means they don't like oxygen. They are very happy in oxygen-poor blood. So the more oxygen you can introduce there in there through physical activity, the better you are, because they will scatter.
Okay.
Does that help you?
Well, if you remember, if this is truly an osteoarthritis rather than rheumatoid arthritis, then it would probably not be in the same category of diseases we're talking about. We're talking about an inflammatory rather than degenerative arthritis.
But she also has, like, after traumas, like she fell on her knees, her inflammation would go up to, her sed rate would go up to, like, 100.
Ooh,
you know, and then...
Then she may very well have a severe
fibromyalgia. Yeah, I'd ask the doctor for additional tests.
Okay.
For infection. And go to an infectious disease specialist if you can arrange it.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your answers.
Okay, good night, Linda. Bye. All right, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the first hour of our program this evening. Well, Linda, we've got, Dr. Pullman, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up this evening's program for us.
Oh, my goodness. There's just so much to say. I did mention the thyroid testing. Arthritis symptoms can be mimicked by so many other things. As soon as your joints start hurting, you might think you have arthritis. But check into food allergies. Check into thyroid dysfunction. Check into a candida problem. Remember that bacteria grow in a sugary environment. So cut way down on your sugar. Drink lots of water to flush toxins out of your body. Go to my website and find a lot of good material on all of these health topics, www.ra-infection-connection.com. Free articles.
All right, fine. Well, of course, that's infectionconnection.com. And the book, again, is Rheumatoid Arthritis, The Infection Connection. It's a well worthwhile getting book if you do have arthritis, and of course it covers some of the other chronic infections that are plaguing humanity today. And believe me, there are so many of them, and some of them are certainly tragedies, but some of them certainly seem to be fitting into some sort of a category of introduced diseases that have been introduced to create chronic disease in our population. And here again, we mentioned Dr. Garth Nicholson's excellent book, Project Daylily. So, first of all, if you do have rheumatoid arthritis, you'd want to read Dr. Catherine Pullman's excellent book, Rheumatoid Arthritis, the Infection Connection. And, of course, we think it's a good enough book that we offer that. We'd like, of course, to get a copy of one of our interviews with Dr. Pullman. We have these as well for you. Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us again, and I look forward to having you back on some of our other programs in the not-too-distant future.
My pleasure, Dr. Stan. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good night. God
Good
bless.
Good night.
All right, fine.
God bless you.
We always enjoy having Dr. Pullman with us here at Radio Liberty. We hope that you'll heed what she has to say. Although she's not a medical doctor, she is a researcher. She comes from an analytical background, having worked on many of the government programs for many years. And she knows how to do scientific research. And when faced with the outlook of, well, you've got a chronic disease and you'll end up in a wheelchair, she decided to do something. Are you willing to do something and begin looking into the background of this incredible story? We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. We hope that you enjoyed our program this evening. And we hope, of course, you'll want to get more information on this and so many other the diseases that are plaguing humanity. The book this evening, Rheumatoid Arthritis, The Infection Connection. We also suggest another book along the same line written by our good friend Dr. Garth Nicholson, and that is Project Daylily. It goes into the new diseases that were introduced by our government in the laboratory studies where they were actually creating these terrible new diseases to plague our people. We have a four-tape set on Lyme disease. We have a four-tape set on on Gulf War illness. We have a 4-tape set on chronic fatigue. And chronic fatigue is a terrible and disabling disease. And it's a very real disease. And yet, of course, the truth about it has been carefully suppressed from the medical profession, because many of these people do have chronic mycoplasma infections with a type of mycoplasm that is genetically produced in the laboratory. In fact, so many of the diseases we have today are produced in the laboratory. In fact, you'll notice that there's been an outbreak of foot and mouth disease over in Great Britain within the last 2 weeks, and just a few miles away from a government laboratory, and the type of hoof and mouth disease obviously was released by that government laboratory. But if you remember, it was an American company in Great Britain. Why would anybody do anything like that? Well, ladies and gentlemen, let me suggest you get my information. We have a video called Don't Dare Call It Genocide. We have a video and DVD called Planned Population Reduction. That's Planned Population Reduction. You really have to understand the mentality of the people who have created these new diseases and how they revel in the suffering they've created. Certainly, Zygmunt Brzezinski, the man who certainly created the Trilateral Commission, former National Security Advisor to President Carter, who laid the basis for all of the tragedy that's unfolding in the Near East today, or I should say in the Middle East today, wrote a book back in 1970 called Between Two Ages, where he talked about how in the future they're going to be able to create new chronic infections and storms and droughts. But those chronic infections are going to be able to create will be used to disable the enemy. And who is the enemy? Why, you and I are, ladies and gentlemen. There really are people who hate humanity, and of course, they have a different world view. They want a one-world government, a one-world religion, and a new world leader. And that, of course, really takes you into my writings on the Brotherhood of Darkness and the DVD that goes with that. Then my talk on the Forbidden Secret. That's the Forbidden Secret. And, of course, there's a syllabus that comes with that at reduced price if you get it. My talk on the hidden agenda, taking in the background of fluoride, and of course the syllabus that comes with that, which is really excellent. If you have not yet seen my talk on Iraq, the Untold Story, and of course the version of it we gave in Colorado is called War, the Untold Story. It goes into all the wars of the last century, how they were all contrived, including the current war. Has a great syllabus. It gives you all sorts of documentation to prove that all the wars were created. The First World War, the Second World War, the No-Win War in Korea, the No-Win War in Vietnam, and now the No-Win Wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And it's like Vietnam all over again. But my talk on Iraq, the Untold Story, I think is very important. And the syllabus is very important. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you'd like to get a free copy of one of our newsletters or a catalog, give us a call, and we'll get it off to you. And then please pray for America, pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision, and for our protection. And we'll be back here in just a moment for the next hour. Our program. Hail, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and the views of our guest. And this evening, our guest is Ron Brown, who does support Radio Liberty, and we certainly appreciate having him come on to our program to bring his wisdom. He's in the gold and silver business, but we like to talk about just what's going on. And we've been talking now for a number of years about the financial problems our government is having, our society is having, and how everything the government is doing is laying us open for a total collapse of our economic system. And we simply ask the question, why would Alan Greenspan, who's a brilliant individual, who is so brilliant, he's been knighted by the Queen of England, as has George Bush and Mayor Giuliani and a number of the elite who make part of the ruling elite of the world. But Alan Greenspan did everything wrong when he was in chairman of the Federal Reserve System. He encouraged people to take out ARMs, these certainly adjustable rate mortgages, knowing full well that down the line many of these people would never be able to make the payments on their adjustable rate mortgages. And then he encourages loan companies to issue adjustable rate mortgages to people who never would have qualified to have a home of their own. And then, of course, he kept the interest rates down very, very low for a long period of time. He refused to regulate the hedge funds and the derivatives market, which, of course, are beginning to unravel today and carry within them the seeds of destruction of our whole economic system. And certainly, Alan Greenspan, Sir Alan, is a very brilliant man who knows exactly what he's done. And the question is, why would he have done what he's done? Well, certainly, we're living through some very exciting times, aren't we, Ron?
We sure are. The things we've been talking about for the last 5 years are starting to culminate, and we're heading very quickly towards some type of monetary crisis, I'm afraid.
In fact, I think it was so interesting that last Thursday and Friday, the European Central Bank flooded the market with it. You know, initially, $138 billion worth of currency, and then, of course, put more currency in again this morning, another $68 billion, and, of course, our own Federal Reserve System put about $64 billion of new currency into our markets, and I don't know how much they put in this morning. We know that Japan's beginning to throw money to create increased liquidity, which is highly inflationary, and yet the central banks are desperate to stave off a collapse of the system, trying to stimulate the economy by massively increasing the amount of liquidity out there. What's your take on it, Ron? Are they going to be able to solve the problem for the time being?
Well, it's just kind of like a magician. You never know how many rabbits he can pull out of his hat. And, you know, it seems like they've gotten their hands down there searching for a rabbit, but I'm not sure they've found one yet. But you can't underestimate their ability to put off the day of reckoning one more day or one more month. But we're getting very close, and you can't fool Mother Nature forever. I think we're getting very close to the point where the whole world is turning against the fiat currencies of the world. And since fiat money is based only on blind faith and confidence, as the confidence erodes, which is certainly happening throughout the world, then it's harder and harder to keep the game going.
And because somebody asked me today what fiat money is, and so we looked up in the dictionary. Fiat money is a government by fiat, but government command that you will accept this as money, even though it isn't. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were just simply talking about the fact we're on a fiat money system. We're on a monetary system with nothing behind our currency at all, other than our faith in the ability of the central bank to maintain a stable currency, and that was their assignment. They were given that obligation back in 1913, and so far they've destroyed 96% of the value of our currency. Will we wait until they've destroyed all of the value of our currency, or will we simply continue down the same road until everything we have has been destroyed economically and our people are as impoverished as the people in third world nations? What do you think is going to happen next, Ron? Do you think that it looks to me like they'll be able to stave off, you know, the collapse of the system? You know, but of course, when you add as much in the way of liquidity as they have, this is going to be highly inflationary, isn't it?
Of course. And of course, there's the old saying that the borrower becomes the slave to the lender. And I was just reading before we went on the air, two Chinese diplomats made the observation that the value of the U.S. dollar as the world's reserve currency is dependent on China continuing to hold and buy more and more of our debt. The implication was, if you're going to insist on these trade policies and things we're doing against China, for example, they wanted to buy up, in L.A.? What were they trying to buy up in L.A.? I forgot what it was, but they tried to buy out the big oil company is what it was.
They mean Unocal. They wanted to buy it.
Yeah, Unocal, and we wouldn't allow them. Well, now they're saying, you know, you're asking us to hold these dollars, but we can't use those dollars for the things we want to, so maybe we need to think twice about buying more and more of your dollars. And, of course, they have become net sellers of the U.S. dollar investments. So when you consider that we need $3 billion a day of foreign money coming in just to keep the treadmill going, and you're starting to see one of the major contributors to that saying, not only do we not want to keep buying more of your debt, we want to cash in some of the chips we've already got. It spells trouble from how we're going to keep this debt bubble going.
Well, I think really what's so interesting is that a number of the major central banks of the world are beginning to set up these sovereign wealth funds, and basically this is to go out and buy assets using the American dollars that they have, so they're not just holding American dollars, but so that they will have something of real value, not simply a paper promise that is backed by the integrity of the American government, because they don't really trust the American government to act responsibly, and we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and Ron was just simply talking about the fact that China and the people over there, and the Chinese leaders are making it very clear that they really control our country. Because, of course, if they were to dump the American dollar, the massive, probably 800 to 900 billion American dollars that they hold, they could bring our currency down overnight. Now, that would be rather foolish for them to do that, because then, of course, they would end up having all those reserve currency dollars that aren't worth anything. So they're not about to collapse our economy, at least not right at this time. But certainly, we are now beholden to the Chinese communists, and we dare not do anything to offend them, because if we did, of course, they could destroy the financial infrastructure of our nation. But I was just commenting to Ron that a number of the nations, we know that China, India, Russia, and certain other nations, four or five others, have formed these sovereign wealth funds, which is simply a fancy name for setting up a corporation to use the reserve currency, American currency, that other countries are holding to begin buying products throughout the world. And of course, where are they going to buy them? They're going to buy them right here. In other words, they want to get rid of their dollars. They want, of course, to buy up America. And of course, what choice will we have? We put ourselves into a situation where they can come and they can buy up the infrastructure of our nation. And they've already sold off the New Jersey Turnpike, the Ohio Turnpike, the Chicago Skyway. They're building the Trans-NAFTA Highway with Spanish money. 25% of our major corporations right here in the United States are already owned by foreign corporations, and they're buying up more every day. And people don't understand what that really means. It means that the profits that come from the businesses here will not remain in America. They will be sent overseas to benefit the people in other countries rather than the people here. And if this continues, soon America will become a third world nation. And people say, that cannot happen. And I would ask, why couldn't it happen? If God is just, why would he bless America when we've turned against him? What are your thoughts on that, Ron?
Well, you know, I think it should be so obvious that what's happening with all the talk about the North American Union. You know, the simple fact to me is that the organization that put out the booklet pushing for this and describing the process was the Council on Foreign Relations, which is the very think tank of elitists that are leading our country down the tubes. And yet a few years back they came out with a 70-page document called Building a North American Community, in which they laid out the plans which they would undermine and totally destroy the sovereignty of the United States and merges in with Mexico and Canada, which is the same thing, of course, that happened in Europe a few years back. So it's the bankers slowly taking over, and they're just undermining the sovereignty and the you know, of the United States. And so I think it tells me we're in the end stage of the game, because they certainly wouldn't come out with this information to alert the people to what they were doing unless they were ready to pull the trigger on the final solution, so to speak.
Well, I mean, I think that probably the release of these massive amounts of liquidity in the market certainly will stabilize it temporarily, but how long will it stabilize it before prices stabilize and then the economy begins to turn down again, and then they've got to do this over and over? And of course, this is exactly what has happened down through the ages with any system on a fiat money system. Usually, however, it's only been countries. Now it's the whole world, and they're all on a fiat money system. Nobody's money has any fixed value, and you have to have a currency with fixed value, or else the whole thing eventually collapses, as it has time and again throughout history. So what do you think the next step is going to be, Ron?
With the economy, you mean?
Right.
I think they have no choice. You know, I've always used a simple analogy. When you have a system that's built on a mountain of debt, then at some point becomes a Ponzi scheme, and you must keep it growing at all cost. So to me, the difference between a inflationary depression and a deflationary depression is a deflationary depression is if someone comes up to you, sticks a 45 in your head and says, take a step back or I'll blow your brains out. See, if you don't take a step back, then the party's over right now. That's deflation. If they don't bail out the system, whenever it starts to fold, you'll see a 29-style banking panic, and the crisis will be on us overnight. So they will always elect to inflate. But in an inflationary depression, in my analogy, 10 steps back and there's a 1,000-foot cliff, so you're in trouble either way. But at least you've got 9 more steps to try to figure a way out of this mess. And so they will always, always elect to inflate their way out of it. The problem is, as you do that, and as the game gets more mature, at the end of the stage, it's kind of like a drug addict. You know, you have to have a fix every 2 hours instead of every 2 weeks. And if you keep doing that, you're going to overdose the patient. As they inflate and bail out everything time after time, and they have to do it faster and harder and bigger, then the credibility of the money becomes in the jeopardy, and things start to unravel very, very quickly. So I think that's where we're heading. They'll bail it out one more time. That's going to increase. You know, right now they're between a rock and a hard place because they have the dollar index, which is right at a 30-year support level, ready to break down. And if that happens, you'll see a paradigm shift in the psychology of these markets as people accelerate their flight out of the dollars worldwide, seeking the refuge of gold and silver. And the simple fact is, there's very little silver and gold out there to go around as people panic out of paper money.
Well, of course, they've been able to keep people out of gold and silver because they've been able to artificially keep the price down suppress the price of commodities exactly in the same way as they'd be able to artificially keep the value of the stock market up. And I don't think anybody who watches the machinations of the stock market doesn't realize that this is totally manipulated, as it was on Friday, where the market was down over 200, it was down well over 350 points on Thursday, down a couple of 250 on Friday, and then just before the end of the day, why, of course, the big boys, the central bank, came in violation of all the laws that we have, and the so-called plunge protection team came in, started buying up stocks frantically to drive the Dow Jones back up so it would not end up precipitously for a second day. And so they manipulate the market because they're playing games with our reality. And when people understand that, how they artificially suppress the price of gold and silver, the price of commodities, but certainly there's every indication that one of these days they're going to begin to lose control of the economy, because there are other countries in the world that don't want to play our game, that don't want to be dominated by the United States, that want, of course, to do what's best for their people rather than to allow the American people to living high on the hog at the expense of people throughout the world. Would you agree or disagree with that, Gerard?
Well, absolutely. And keep in mind, every time they manipulate the market, they create a lie or a deception that they have to cover up. And eventually, Mother Nature, the laws of economics, are going to force the truth out. And once that happens, all these frauds and manipulations are going to be exposed for what they are, and then the panic will happen very quickly. I'll give you one example. As you know, I follow the silver market very closely, have for the last 30 years. And they've manipulated the silver market in many different ways. One of the ways is on the commodity market. You have the COMEX, where you trade these silver contracts. And the reality is that three banks are short somewhere approaching 300 million ounces of silver, which means they've sold paper contracts to someone for over close to 300 million ounces, and they don't have any silver to back what they've sold. So they're in a position where they would have to buy back the silver to cover those shorts, and of course they couldn't do that in the market, so we have a scandal approaching there. Secondly, you have this silver ETF. I'll just go on record as saying I don't think there's any way, even if they had the proper amount of silver back in today, if this thing takes off again, there's no way they could buy the amount of silver that they would need to cover those contracts. For those of you who don't know what the ETF is, it's simply a mutual fund that takes the money, in this case the silver ETF, and uses its quote-unquote to buy physical silver and store it for the investors.
And because the E is for exchange, T, trade fund. ETF, right. Exchange-traded funds in silver. They have exchange-traded funds in gold, exchange-traded funds in platinum. And, of course, the big boys are using this to manipulate the market, because they know that everybody's not going to all at one time come and demand their silver. But what happens if they did? And then, of course, the whole charade would be over.
And there's another way that they do it. In fact, we've seen what I call the first worm has come out of the 5-gallon can. A few months back, there was a lawsuit brought against, of all people, Morgan Stanley, because they were selling and storing silver for people. About a year ago, a man by the name of Ted Butler, who follows the silver market and the manipulation, he wrote a scathing article to anyone who was reading. He says, and I'll paraphrase it, he says, listen, you turkeys, if you're a silver investor and you're sitting there holding a piece of paper that says you have silver stored in XYZ depository of bank, you better get off your duff right now and go and check and make sure that silver does exist. Get the serial numbers on the bars or whatever it takes, but convince yourself that they have the silver out there. Well, apparently a group did that, and they went to Morgan Stanley, and they couldn't get satisfaction that the silver existed, so they brought a class action lawsuit against them. And lo and behold, when it went to court, it came out that not only was Morgan Stanley not buying the physical silver to fill the contracts they had sold, they weren't even going into the futures market and hedging their risk.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is Ron Brown. We're talking about what's happening in the everybody in the markets now. And what's happened is we have a lot of heavily leveraged hedge funds. And these hedge funds have bought, you know, all these collateralized debt obligations, so-called CDOs, anticipating that they're going to make a lot of money. They certainly have to have sometimes up to $5 million even to get into a hedge fund. It's like going to Las Vegas and wanting to play poker. You know, it's $1,000 a chip. Well, of course, it's $5 million to get into many of these hedge funds, and so this is where the big boys play. But then, of course, they can go out and when they have $1 billion, they can leverage that up to $10 billion, and they can go and they can buy these collateralized debt obligations. And that's really great, you know, as long as the debt obligation is worth what they paid for it. But what happens if it isn't worth what they paid for it? And the money, the income they're extracting from this bond does not materialize. And then, of course, somebody says, well, you've got these bonds up as security, and they're not worth it. We want our money back. And then, of course, you can't borrow the money. And so we're beginning to see a certain number of our major hedge funds already begin to contract. And some of these major hedge funds are going under with a loss of literally tens of billions of dollars just disappearing. So suddenly this is happening all over the world, as these people who are heavily leveraged, you know, and trying to make a fast buck because of greed, suddenly find out that the bonds that they purchased were not worth what they've been told, and the whole financial system is beginning to unravel. Would that be a good analysis of what's going on, Ron?
Oh, absolutely. You know, when you create this false prosperity based on just running the printing press and inflating money into the system, it creates a lot of prosperity and profits, and people are just euphoric with the way things are going, and that's the early part of the inflationary cycle. But as people make more and more money faster and faster, they get sloppy with the way they invest it, and then you get all these malinvestments. And the best way to look at that is just look at what's going on in the real estate market the last 5-6 years. I mean, think about it. When Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac started the printing press rolling to bring us out of the potential depression caused by the collapse of the dot-coms and the high-tech stocks in year 2000, when they pumped that money into the system, real estate values started to go up, and people had $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 houses suddenly had $7,500, $200,000 houses. And of course, in California, you're talking about $1 million houses, not even something special anymore. And so that was creating lots and lots of profits for people. And they were making it so easy to get the money that they said, hey, you've got $100,000 worth of profit in your house. Why don't you borrow against that and reinvest in 5 more houses or 2 more houses or whatever? So what you see is all these houses, this real estate boom was going up on basically speculation, and so you really created many more houses than there was a demand for, and now all of a sudden the thing has come to an end. And I was reading tonight that there's 6 million people who bought houses right at the top of the market with no money down. So now all of a sudden this euphoric, you know, just buy.
Hold up, we'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Ron was simply talking about how the housing market was making money for people hand over fist. And greed reared its ugly head. And people were buying houses for speculation. And they'd buy a house and they'd hold it for 6 months and it would be worth half again as much as they paid for it. And they'd sell it and they'd buy 2 houses, and then they'd buy 3 or 4 houses. And of course, we had the builders. You know, they were able to put up these speculation homes, and then people were buying them as quickly as they were built. They were buying them before they were ever built. And they were raising the prices, and people were still buying them because in this building bubble, why, of course, they could turn around and sell them in a month or two. In fact, sometimes they could sell them. They could buy the house before it was built and sell the house before it was completed, and they might turn over $100,000 profit. Gee, this is just too good to be true. Well, let's do it again. Now let's get, instead of two houses, let's get four houses, four spec houses. And now the market has turned. And you're having all these houses that have been built and they can't sell them. And people are simply walking away and giving up their down payments and because they don't dare take delivery of the homes. And then, of course, we find out that we're selling less lumber because they're not building the homes as much as they were before. And we begin to find out that the people who, for instance, make paint, you know, they're not doing well because people are not buying paint for the new homes, or they're not buying paint for the automobiles because automobile sales are down. And so the automobile market is contracting, and the housing market is contracting, and everything that has to do with construction, you know, is beginning to contract, and people don't have as much money for spending in the Walmart and the other major stores, and in many places, you know, commercial sales are down, and this is what happens when a economy begins to fail. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But if you've been listening to our program, as we've been warning you for a long period of time, this is going to happen. It has always happened down through the ages with any fiat money system where there is, of course, no responsibility. You can print as much wealth, money and wealth as you want to, but eventually, the whole thing always collapses. Well, go ahead, Ron. He said, you've been studying this as long as I have.
Yeah, and I was using the real estate market just to illustrate how that reckless spending and reckless policies has spread throughout the whole economy. You look at Wall Street and what they've done with all these CDOs and all these creative things they've kept. Because they're making billions of dollars, you know. I read a while back that the top 25 hedge fund managers averaged over $50 million a year in income. So they're getting paid to perform, so they take high risk and leverage to have good performance. And that all works wonderful when you're going up and booming in the economy, but everything that's created artificially eventually has to come to an end. And when it does and starts back down, then all that leverage that was so euphoric on the way up becomes tragic on the way down. And that's where we are. You know, we've had a 20-year binge on easy money. And now I'm afraid, unfortunately, the hangover is here. And it's going to be a horrendous hangover because we've had one heck of a binge.
And I think we have, but of course we've also had it. We are on the edge of an inflationary spiral. That, of course, will wipe out the savings of the American people. And, of course, the government is refusing to tell us what's happening to the M3, which is the ultimate monetary increment that tells us what the government is really doing and the true rate of inflation. And they tell us, oh, the rate of inflation is 2%. Well, if that's the core inflation, then the real rate might be up to 4%, and we're worried about that. But the truth of the matter is, the real rate of inflation is 11%, and they know it, and they're lying, and they're frightened to death because, of course, what they just did this last weekend is like fighting fire with kerosene or gasoline. It simply inflames the whole system all the more, and an inflationary spiral is already underway, and then you pour more money in, you create more inflation. So there is really no way out of this, other than to hope that something will come along. Maybe we can blame it all on Osama bin Laden. Maybe we can get ourselves into another war. A war is always a wonderful way to divert attention away from the malfeasance and certainly the irresponsibility of our elected officials. The rats are beginning to leave the ship. You notice that Karl Rove is leaving government at the end of this month. I wonder why. He obviously knows what lies ahead, and, well, I fear for my country. I want to reflect that God is just. Well, Dr. Stan here, as far as I can see, Ron, we're just going to have more and more and more inflation. I don't think there's any way out of it. I think that they've taken the course by dumping all the money into the economy that they're going to take inflation rather than deflation, rather than face the music and do what's right. They're going to compound the problem. What are your thoughts?
Well, Richard Russell said it best. Once you create this massive debt, because keep in mind, our whole economy, our whole monetary system is really built on a mountain of debt. It's the bond market that is the foundation for this whole monetary system. And that bond market, anything that's a debt instrument, is based on faith. So once this debt gets to a certain level, then the cost of allowing it to ever deflate becomes so tragic that they don't dare allow it to happen. Richard Russell says it best, inflate or die. And that's really where we are. We've got this massive debt structure. You know, they admit to $9 trillion. If you add into that all the contingent liabilities for the pension plans and the Social Security and all the other perks, the drug prescriptions and everything, according to the experts, the true national debt of our liabilities is around $70 trillion and growing. And so at that point, what do? You can't ever allow it to contract. You have to just keep printing to cover it up. And so it'll do it. In my opinion, they will inflate until the world finally rejects the dollar, which they're in the process of doing. Whether that takes another 6 months or 6 years to finally culminate, I don't know. But once they do, then once the dollar is rejected as money, then we will have deflation, because what was money is no longer money, so then you have a decrease in the money in circulation. Kind of like the Confederate dollars. You know, they were inflating the heck with the Confederate dollars until the world finally said, we don't even accept that as money anymore. And, of course, at that point, the Confederacy was doomed, and I'm afraid that's what's going to happen to the U.S. government.
All right, fine. Of course, I think it's so. And, of course, this is what happened during the Revolutionary War. When they tried to inflate, to finance the Revolutionary War with a currency they call
Continental dollar.
Continental dollar. And it came to be, the phrase came to be, it wasn't worth continental. And
right.
In other words, they just printed more and more and more money, and they insisted everybody take it. And eventually, nobody would take it because it didn't have any value. And, of course, that's historical. Right today, in Rhodesia, where we put the government in power, the rate of inflation is 10,000% a year. Almost 1,000% a month. It's not imaginary, it's very real. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Ron Brown. Ron, before we go on, I want you to give out your webpage, tell people how you can get in touch with you, and, of course, how you may be able to help them. And incidentally, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And let me tell you, we've been talking about these things with Ron for 4 or 5 years now, and everything that he has been saying all this time is coming to pass. The system is beginning to break down. They're having to massively increase the amount of money in circulation, which is highly inflationary, and with an inflation that's already running at 11%, that's the real inflation, and they're simply lying to you. Why, of course, by next year, we could be up to 14 or 15%, and where will we be a year or two from now? And will other countries continue using the dollar as a stable storehouse of wealth? I don't think so. I think that the leaders of the other countries are going to reject the dollar, and when they do, we will lose the reserve status of the dollar, and literally trillions of dollars will come flooding back into this country, and then forget about your pension, your savings, your CDs, your loans, your annuities. Everything denominated in dollars is going to collapse. I was talking to my friend John Leffler today, who has a radio program, and he was telling me that they are very, very close to an attorney. And this attorney deals with people who want to leave America, become expatriates, and get their money out. And he's done this for many years. He said suddenly he has a deluge of people with big bucks we're talking about, you know, tens of millions of dollars. And what are they doing? Why, of course, they're preparing to leave America. They're getting the money out of the country because they know what's going to happen to our economy. You see Karl Rove leaving the government. He's been there, been with the president, Bush ever since he first entered politics in Texas. Karl Rove knows what the future holds. Well, Ron, how can people get in touch with you, and what will they get when they do get in touch with you?
Okay, I don't have a website, as you know, Dr. Stan, but I do have some material I've put together to try to explain to the people what's going on with the economy and how they can best protect themselves. And if anyone would like a copy of that, they just call me at 1-800-595-0561. That's 1-800-595-0561, and I'll be glad to send the package to you. You know, Dr. Stan, I've been in this business almost 30 years now, and I don't even have a Yellow Page ad. I just work with existing clients and people I've dealt with for years and the people they refer to me. So my satisfaction is to try to educate people and help them to protect themselves from where we're heading, because I think our nation is heading for deep trouble, and people who don't see it coming. You know, the scriptures say, my people perish for lack of knowledge, and yet we're brainwashed by the media, by our schools, and very few Americans understand monetary theory and what's about to happen to our country.
Well, Ron is going to be one of the speakers at the conference we're going to hold on the 28th of October of this year here in the Monterey Bay Area at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course, where we have our meetings every year. So if you'd like to come, we're going to have Dr. Garth Nicholson and Michael Shaw will be there. We always have a good time. Hope you can make it, and I hope you'll have to come and hear Ron speak about, of course, what's going on at that time. That's the 28th of October. It is a Sunday, but we're putting it there because we found many of our people had to work on Saturday and couldn't make it. We had a great turnout last year. Hope to have a great turnout again this year. Well, Ron, certainly, you know, if you were going to invest in gold today, what sort of gold would you invest in? Would you invest in gold bullion? Would you get something that something like the coins that are minted by our own treasury? Would you get $20 gold pieces? That maybe didn't have a lot of collector's value. What sort of gold would you invest in?
Okay, first, people need to understand there's really two types of dealers out there. There's what we call the bullion dealers, and I would consider myself that. My preference is to get as much gold or silver for your money as you can. Then you have on the other side of the street the numismatic dealers who deal in collector-type coins. That's a very unique... there's nothing wrong with collector coins per se, but it's an arena where most people, when they first get in, are not prepared or understand the nature of the game. Therefore, they're vulnerable to being ripped off by a lot of con artists, which there are in any business. But, you know, just as a rule of thumb, the minimum commission person will pay on a collector-type coin is 25% to 30% markup. And see, a bullion dealer typically works off of about 3%. So I think it says what I think is the best way to go. If you pay a 25% markup, you almost have a 50-75% increase in the value of that investment just to break even. So not that there's anything wrong with numismatic coins, but I just think bullion is the best way to go. One thing the numismatic dealers tend to hype is that those type of coins are not confiscatable by government, and yet bullion is, leaving the impression that all bullion purchases have to be turned into the government, which is totally not the case. But I would just say this. Anyone that thinks they know what will or wouldn't be confiscated if we get to that type of crisis, in my opinion, they're being disingenuous, because there's no way they could know. Whatever they choose to confiscate, if they do, this is a decision they will make in the future, not something they've made in the past. Well, how could anyone know? But it's kind of a hype to encourage people to buy these collector coins, because when you get into that type of value, what is it worth? You see, if you're buying a bullion gold coin and you know the price of gold is at $680, if someone tries to charge you $1,000 an ounce, you know you're getting ripped off. But with the collector coin, you don't. So I would just tell people to, you know, what I'm really saying is I like bullion coins best, I think.
All right, fine. Well, Chris, then would you be, what type of bullion coins? Because there's a lot of bullion coins.
And when you say bullion, you're talking about any type of, like, the gold eagles. The U.S. government makes four different sizes. They have a 1 ounce, a half ounce, a quarter ounce, and a tenth ounce. They came out with another coin here just recently, the knockoff of the old Buffalo nickel. And that's one you have to be careful of, because coin dealers are charging up to $1,100 for it, and it's nothing but a bullion coin. You know, it shouldn't be selling for more than $700, $710 max. You know, with today's price at $680. You can buy Krugerrands. You know, South Africa puts out the four different sizes. In fact, that's the cheapest way to buy gold. You can buy those just barely over the spot price of gold.
Now, what about, because what are the American Eagles running?
American Eagles right now, you can usually, the smaller you go in coin, the little more you pay for them, because it costs more to make 10 coins if you're making a 10-ounce coin than it does to stamp out one-ounce gold eagle. So you're going to pay a little more fabrication fee with the 10-ounce gold eagle. Now you can get them in the aftermarket now for about 8% over spot, over the price of gold. If you're buying one-ounce coins, you're going to have to pay maybe 6% over spot, 7% maybe. Depends on the market. It all fluctuates. So the Krugerrand is the cheapest way to go. Canada makes the maple leaves. Australia makes the nuggets and the kangaroos. Austria makes a pure gold coin. So there's a lot of different bullion coins, and they're all gold, so they're all, any of them will work.
All right, fine. So really, as far as you're concerned, would you be better off simply getting the Krugerrand than getting the American Eagle?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, anywhere close to the price, I would rather have the U.S. Eagle. It's a prettier coin. It's, you know, possibly a little more liquid down the future, because, you know, up till recently, the South Africa Krugerrand was the most liquid coin in the world. More of those minted than any other coin in history. So I might mention one other thing, though. And when you get into the numismatic realm, there's also something we call the semi-numismatic. And that is where you buy these $20 gold pieces and the like in less than pristine condition. They're like AU, almost uncirculated or extra fine. And you have a unique opportunity in that market today. And I think a lot of it is attributed to this Buffalo coin, which has been so popular in the markets. The dealers are selling for $800,000. I've even seen them going for $1,200 a piece. So what's happened is the coin dealers have been dumping their regular inventory to load up on the coins. It's the hot seller. And so as they dump these $20 gold pieces, which are a 100-year-old gold coin that used to be legal tender for us, you can now buy them for the same price as a gold eagle. So I would tell anyone, whenever you can buy a 100-year-old coin for a bullion price, just jump on it, because you can't go wrong. You're not paying for that collector, or that potential collector value, which will surely come down the road.
And of course, are you actually paying that, what, about 6 or 7% over a spot price, something like that?
Pretty much, yeah. Maybe 8%. So to me, it's a bird nest on the ground, you know, whenever you can buy a 100-year-old coin, because when... What's going to happen, Dr. Stan, is when the next leg of this bull market triggers, and we're in the process of that happening as we get out of these summer doldrums, then you're going to see demand for gold and silver accelerate, and it's going to accelerate very rapidly, because the dollar crisis is getting worse all the time. And so as the demand for gold and silver accelerates, you're going to see the supply of these $20 gold pieces. Let's face it, you can't make any more 1907 gold eagles, can you? or gold, $20 gold pieces. So the supply is static. There's only so many of them out there. And once the demand accelerates, you could see the availability of those coins dry up in a matter of weeks.
All right, fine. Well, then, Chris, let's talk a little bit about silver. If you were going to get silver, what status would you get? Would you get the rounds? Would you get the eagles? Would you get the would you get silver junk coins? What would you get?
I always tell people to start with a junk bag. My favorite would be a junk bag of dimes. It takes like 13 dimes to get up to an ounce of silver. So if we run into a monetary crisis, as people perceive that on the horizon, they start to realize they need to put some of their paper dollars into gold and silver as a refuge. But while they're at it, why not buy it in smaller increments? So if we get into a real crisis, you can use that for barter and trade. So that's when these bags become very, very profitable and in great demand.
Well, what does a bag of, silver coins go for now?
A bag of coins is $1,000 face value,
right,
of the pre-1965, which is 90% silver.
All right. It
represents about 720 ounces of pure silver. Today you can buy those at a little over 9,000, maybe 9,200. So you're paying about $12.84 an ounce for them, and that's basically what silver is. So it's the cheapest way to buy silver. Plus, it has the advantage of when the crisis starts to accelerate, then the price of those bags will go up. I've seen them go to over a 50% premium two times since I've been in the business. So you'll have a premium play on the bags in addition to just the price, the rise in price of silver.
Well, how high did they go when, of course, back in 1980, I guess, 79, when we had the run?
Yeah, and in fact, in 1979-80, the bags went to $28,500 a bag. Now, that was actually a discount. I don't think that will ever happen again. If anyone was around during that period, you remember you turn on the TV or get the paper every morning, there was full-page ads of bring your silver and gold down to the Holiday Inn or whatever, and we'll give you your cash for it. And so what happened in that period is the silver and the gold just came literally out of the woodwork. Millions and millions of ounces, and the refiners couldn't keep up with the production of it to refine it, melting it down. So it would take them 6, 8, 10 weeks to melt down what they were buying today. As a result, they were discounting what they would pay for it. So the bags actually went to a discount back then, and I don't think that'll ever happen again, because over the last 60 years, we've probably melted down, as I understand it, somewhere between 90 and 95% of all the bags ever minted.
Well, what about getting something like the Silver Eagle? Would that be a good thing to do?
That's my second favorite. And to be quite honest, Dr. Stan, I didn't used to promote those. The reason why, when silver was back at $4 an ounce, you had to pay an extra dollar or $1.25 to buy those. And to me, you could get 25% more silver by buying just the generic rounds or the bags. But as silver has come up to $13, you're still paying about a dollar more to get them. Now that premium is not so bad, so I think it's a good way to go, because the silver dollar, I mean, the Silver Eagle has stolen the show. Everyone loves the Silver Eagle. In fact, what you're starting to see now is some of the old ones minted are going for bigger and bigger premiums.
All right, fine. We've got Tony calling from Aptos here. Hi, Tony. Have a question?
Greetings. Yeah, I have a couple of questions. You were talking earlier about those 100-year-old gold coins.
Right.
What are they called? Are they just eagles? Are they $20 gold eagles?
Well, you have two types, the $20 liberties, and those were minted from 1870 or something like that through 1908, 1907. And then after that, they changed the design to the St. Gaudens. And that was minted from 1907 through 1928. So they called in the gold. So there's a lot more of the liberties out there, because they were minted for many, many more years. But when you go to buy them, especially when you get into the higher grades, they start going up in price. While there's a lot more of them, they're mostly used, so you don't have as many pristine coins, you know, in the older design.
If you're just looking to buy gold, and not just for collector value, but just for security or value, just to hold it, the used coins are just fine, right?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. Especially these $20 gold pieces, you know, you can get them in AU condition, almost uncirculated, for a bullion price. And I would project that once the gold starts up, you're going to see those go to a premium. In fact, the very coin dealers that have been dumping those to buy the buffalo, because they're making hay with that one while the sun shines, once this thing triggers and the buffalo runs its course, now they're going to come back and be touting the...
Oh, we're going to have to hold you right there all day. Go ahead, Ron. Go ahead, finish the thought.
Yeah, I was just going to say, once the flight back in the gold starts, then the availability of these $20 gold pieces will dry up because you can't make any more of them, and that's when the premium will return with the vengeance. And again, you're not paying for the premium plate because you're buying it at a bullion price, but if you can buy it at a bullion price and then sell it down the road at a high premium to gold, then it's a win-win situation.
Now, you talked earlier about bag of silver and the prices being right around $9,000. You said at one time they went up to $28,000. But that is all relative to the U.S. dollar. If the U.S. dollar collapses, the value stays in the gold, but you have no paper to relate it to.
Well, you know, one of the big authors in this industry, a fellow by the name of Jason Hommel, who promotes gold and silver stocks mostly, he came out with an editorial here about a week or so ago, which he predicted that within 15 years, the price of silver would hit $8,000 an ounce. Now, that sounds absolutely ludicrous, unless you understand that if the dollar is heading towards zero, which the way it's going, it will be heading towards zero in the next 15 years, then the price of silver in terms of dollar is heading towards infinity. So when you say what price of silver do you think silver will go to, it doesn't do any good to get into that debate unless you first say, where is the dollar going? And I think since the dollar is being repudiated by the world, then people that maintain and hold their savings in dollar instruments are going to get clobbered just as they've done throughout history, you know, in Mexico and Brazil and all these other places where they just literally take digits off the currency overnight.
Okay, anything else you wanted to say, Tony?
No, thank you very much.
Okay, fine, thank you. And our guest has been Ron Brown. It's always a pleasure to have Ron with us. Ron, once again, let's get your telephone number out for our listeners.
That's 1-800-595-0561.
One more time.
1-800-595-0561.
All right, sir. Well, we're certainly looking forward to having you with us as a guest here at our October 28th annual Radio Liberty Seminar. And I hope we get a real good turnout. I suspect we will. So thanks very much for being with us tonight. We'll be talking to you later this month. We are certainly living in very dangerous, but I think the times that we anticipate, because there's no way you can have a fiat money system without eventually destroying itself. You can't repeal history. Our leaders know that, and they're going to try to put off the day of reckoning. Good night. God bless.
Thanks, sir.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course the day of reckoning is upon us. And of course, we've already started on an inflationary spiral, and then faced with the potential collapse of the market. Why? They had to just add massive amounts of money to the economy over this last weekend, which is even more inflationary. And the real rate of inflation, at least according to Sydney, Bob Chapman and other experts, is in the realm of about 11%. And with this new infusion of money, and of course there's going to be more infusions of money and more to try to keep the system afloat. And with that, of course, will, I really believe, come run away inflation. And that's the history of every country that's ever turned to a fiat money system. But don't you worry, they always have a solution, and that's to take us into another war with a draft for men and women and boys and girls and your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren, and of course then a terrible slaughter, and then of course who knows even what the outcome of the war will be. But wars often are associated with a repudiation of the currency and chaos, and then you start in all over again. But if we're going to have a global government, we've got to have a global currency. We're going to have a global currency. We're going to have to destroy the American dollar. And I believe that is why Alan Greenspan, Sir Alan Greenspan, did what he has done. And that is, of course, betray the trust of the American people and undermine the value of our currency, knowing full well that if he didn't regulate the hedge funds, if he didn't regulate the derivative market, if he could get enough people to buy their adjustable rate mortgages, get enough people to loan on the adjustable rate mortgages, create an inflationary spiral, why, they would be able to destroy the value of our currencies and move us towards the one world government, the one world religion, and the new world leader. And if you have not yet, Chris, read my February 2007 newsletter, it's available up on the internet, and it simply quotes to you the plan, the master plan, as it was dictated, as it was channeled to Alice Bailey back in 1956 by a demonic spirit named Joachim. And if you'd like to get a, if you don't have your access to a computer, we'll be glad to send you a copy of that newsletter. That's the February 2007 newsletter. We hope many of you want to get, of course, my material on finance, my talk on the financial tsunami and the syllabus goes with that, my talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness and the book that goes with that, my talk on the Forbidden Secret, which tells of the secret that's been passed down for 5,000 years by the secret societies and the syllabus that goes with that, the DVD, award-winning, very professionally made DVD, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and the second DVD in the series, Riddles in Stone. That's Riddles in Stone, fascinating material. And then, of course, we have the talk that was given by the producer of those two VDs, those two programs. That was, of course, Chris Pinto. And the talk he gave at our last convention was called The Atlantis Connection. The Atlantis Connection. Now you say, well, what does Atlantis have to do with what's going on today? And Lost Atlantis has everything to do with what's going on today, because there are people who believe that America is the new Atlantis. America will lead the world to where it was at the time of the ancient Atlantis. Of course, many people believe that that is the very corrupt and evil society that existed before the Great Flood. And as our Lord said, when he was asked, how will we know when you're going to return? He says, as it was in the days of Noah. As it was in the days of Noah. And of course, what happened in the days of Noah? Why, of course, they had a great flood. We'll be back here then tomorrow evening at the same time. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty. Our telephone number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.